It's a kind of magic. It is not the last time I will say that or sing that, rather. In fact, just another couple episodes in, I think I'm going to be singing it a lot again. Hey, guys, welcome. Ladies and gents, welcome to Tater Thoughts. This is Charlie Tate. And I am kicking off a new era, another era of Queen. Their 12th album released in 1986. Can you believe it? I can't. Amazing. Every time I do an album kickoff like this, and it amazes me because I go back and I look at my notes for every single album kickoff I've done, and somehow, despite the fact that we're long past my favorite Queen era, and you would think I would have more notes for those albums, somehow, my notes just keep getting longer and longer. And I have two theories for that. One, I think in some respects, we're actually getting more simply because there's more to take from. More interviews, more videos. There's simply more to dive into and pick apart. I think the other thing is I've just gathered that many more resources that I trust that I keep going back to. When I first did these Queen deep dives and I did albums one and albums two, I wasn't including everything I am now because I hadn't discovered those resources. And I'm really sad because we missed out on some great album quotes and commentary from the boys. We missed out on probably some of those early interviews the boys did for those albums. I simply hadn't discovered all of those resources. Shame on me. But here we are, kicking off album 12. Cannot believe we are at this point. And yes, we are in, wow, the second half of the 80s now. Getting somewhere. There's a lot of milestones with this album, actually. Some changes in the way it sounds, very much due to the way the album was made and the motivation for it. This is not just your average Queen album, no. And there's an energy about it that is somewhat contagious and uplifting and fun. I think it carries the previous album, The Works, energy to a new level in that regard, but other things change and shift. And keep in mind, we just had Live Aid, the fantastic, momentous Live Aid in 1985 that pushed our boys into this realm of, wow, let's go make another album. If you remember, in the last episode, I talked about how they were pretty intent on taking a break. The boys did The Works, and then they thought, all right, let's kick back a little bit. Well, Live Aid and The World, they had other plans. Queen kicked it out of the park, wowed everybody, including all the other performers and bands there that day, and essentially felt compelled, invigorated to do something else. How are they going to do it, though? I think that was the big question. But one opportunity led them to a new way of doing a full-on album that they hadn't done before, at least not in this combination. Album 12, A Kind of Magic, it certainly is, released June 2nd of 86 in the UK and June 3rd, the very next day, in the US. It was recorded November of 1985 through April of 86 at Musicland, Mountain, and Townhouse Studios. And drumroll, please, it charted number one in the UK. Amazing. Fabulous. We love it. And can we believe it? Of course. Of course. The boys were so incredible at Live Aid the year before. It would almost guarantee their next album be a number one. There are some other reasons for that. We'll go into the fun facts. We'll talk all about it. And it spent 63 weeks on the chart in the UK. 63 weeks, over a year. Smash hit. But guess what? In the US, this only hit 46. Their worst charting in the States since Queen 2, all the way back in 1974, which hit number 49. That's really amazing when you think about it. But let's talk about that for a minute. I do have some other chart results here for you, which are much better than number 46. But let's add some context to number 46 in the US. And actually, it's interesting. The Works hit number 23. 46 is perfectly doubled. That's kind of scary in a way. Why? Why 46? A little bit more backtracking, because the context is important. Before Live Aid, all the way back when the boys were releasing singles for The Works, 1984, they did the song, I Want to Break Free. Of course, you guys know that song. Most people have seen the video. And the video is more recognizable than the song. I have a hunch that if the video didn't exist, the song would not be so memorable, would not be so loved. What about the video? Well, the boys, of course, did a parody of Coronation Street, which was an English show. And unfortunately, because they didn't do another version of the video, that parody, that angle of the video, the cheeky, let's do this will be fun attitude about it was almost completely lost on the US audience. Very few would have understood the reference to Coronation Street. So, unfortunately, a lot of people were at least confused, and yes, some were completely offended. Absolutely no context about why their rock band would do this. Why? So Queen lost a lot of footing in the States because of this. And they're never going to tour again in the States because of it either. Now, yes, Live Aid was a huge success. I think even in the States, the boys saw a little bit more relief come to them after Live Aid. They had a resurgence of sorts. But the States would never again embrace the band like they did when the boys had their amazing number one album, Looking at You, The Game, in the United States. That was their crowning achievement in the United States. We're well past that. Super sad. But A Kind of Magic also hit number one on the Argentinian chart, number two on the Dutch Albums Top 100, number three in Austria, and number four on the Swiss and German album charts. It's interesting how it did so well over there in Europe and in South America, but yet it just, by Queen standards, pretty much tanked in the United States. It makes me sad. Maybe it was their choice of singles. Maybe it was simply the remnants of what happened previously, that fallout still lingering in the air. But of course, we still love our boys. And I have a plethora of interview footage that I pulled band comments from for the A Kind of Magic comments, these interviews. Here we go. I have a little something from everybody, and there's a lot, so bear with me. Yes, I have a lot of content for this dive kickoff going into this album. We'll start with Brian. Quote, we said no because we wanted a rest, and then we saw about 20 minutes cut of this Highlander film, and we thought, great, that's us, unquote. Highlander! What am I talking about? Why is Brian talking about? The boys were going to take a break. After they did The Works, all right, let's take a breather. Let's take some time off, maybe dabble in some projects of our own. Then, of course, Live Aid happened, reinvigorated everything, turned Queen's world upside down, in John's own words, and they felt compelled, revitalized, to get together, get back into the studio, and do more. Well, what are we going to do? This opportunity kicked everything off. What's Brian talking about? Highlander. Highlander, of course, the action, drama, sort of period film, Highlander. And you guys, I needed my own point of reference because I knew the six songs we hear on A Kind of Magic that are included in Highlander in some form or another sound different in the film, and I could not find those snippets of film individually edited to hear these Queen songs to understand how they sounded within the film. So I had to go and watch the whole thing. I'd never seen it. I'd seen tiny little snippets of Highlander. I knew what it was about. I knew who was in it. I understood the story, but I'd never seen it. So I thought, this is fun. This is an opportunity. I'm just going to sit back and grab some popcorn and chill out and watch Highlander. What did I think of it? It was okay. It was okay. It was entertaining. There were some effects that were fun. Some of the cinematography was absolutely gorgeous. But the dialogue felt a little flat. I didn't believe some of the characters. The conviction wasn't there. It was a little bit wonky in the editing. The pacing was slow too many times. I kept checking, okay, how much time is left? I'm probably not going to go back and watch it again. But I needed to understand how these boys' songs felt, worked, elevated the film within it. I had to get that in my head. And I came to the conclusion that even though the film feels kind of disjointed, and even though I don't always feel like the music goes with the film all that well, I do think that the music as a whole elevates the film from something it would otherwise be. Now, that's not to say that it wouldn't be a decent film if Queen hadn't done the soundtrack, because Queen were not the only band considered. British rock band Marillion turned down the chance to record the soundtrack. They were on a world tour. Their guitarist later said he regretted that decision. David Bowie, Sting, love me some Sting. Duran Duran, they were all considered to do the soundtrack for the film. But eventually, it of course went to Queen. I could imagine any of those artists and bands doing a great job. Actually, I love their music in various ways. I love the work of all of these artists and bands. But of course, Queen, the best of the best for me. I'm super glad they did this because, of course, it brought them this whole new album. So they were working on these songs for Highlander, and they reworked some of them as a more conventional song structure to be part of an official album. A Kind of Magic is not a soundtrack album, although it was referred to as such a time or two. It is not a soundtrack album. It's not like Flash Gordon. But speaking of Flash Gordon, I do want to emphasize one thing. What I think the boys do very, very well, and even though I said there are moments where the music is a little bit disjointed from the film, I don't think that means, guys, that doesn't mean the music is bad. All it means is that the editing is not what it probably should have been. I would have loved to have been a film editor. I catch myself, you know how there's continuity? I can't say that word. There's errors. Let's say you're watching a film and the shot cuts from one character to another, and they come back to the other character, and you notice something's different in the background. That is me. I'm like, oh, continuity error. I would have loved to have been a film editor. It would have been fun. But the process of editing is very, very hard. And when you get to the point where you're doing music, it's even harder. Because here's the thing. There is also a score within the film. It's not just Queen's music. And the score is actually quite good. The score is actually moving. It's really emotional and evocative. The orchestral score was composed by Michael Kamen. Kamen? Sorry. I think it's Kamen. I think I knew someone with the last name Kamen in high school. I think it's Kamen. Sorry about that. Anyway, yes. So we have Michael Kamen's score, which is very sweeping and atmospheric and majestic. And it's, yeah, larger than life. In all the best ways. And then, of course, we had these Queen songs. But Queen was writing music after seeing snippets of film. So it's not like they're sitting there in this massive room watching the scenes go by and conducting and writing things as they go. Yes, they're inspired to write lyrics and melodies and harmonies based on what they're seeing and what they're hearing within the film. But they're not doing it in long stretches. So they're going back to the studio and they're writing things or putting things together after the fact, which is a very tricky thing when you're the editor, because then you have to take these finished songs, or mostly finished songs, pieces of music, and put them to pieces of film that are also being edited. So I think that's why we have some moments that feel a little bit off. Now, that being said, back to what I was going to say. What I think Queen does very well, and they demonstrated this with Flash Gordon, their ability to take an emotion, a character's feeling on screen, or what we as viewers are feeling, they are able to take that and turn it into something sweeping and epic and a soundscape that works very well. Say what you will about Flash Gordon, about the film in general, the guys did a pretty good job. I mean, we're talking about a rock band, but they're not just a rock band. They are Queen. Queen is everything. Queen is so much more than just rock. And by Queen's own definition, everything was rock and roll. So there you go. These guys could take an emotion and translate it into sound. And Highlander showcases that even more brilliantly. We get something fabulous from all of the boys. Every one of them has a moment in the soundtrack that's really quite impressive. So A Kind of Magic. And that phrase, that saying, that title, of course, inspired from a line in Highlander. A Kind of Magic. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the song in just a couple of episodes. But all right. Band comments, where was I? I had just kicked it off with Brian. So there you go. A little bit of context for you. There's a lot of context to be said in this episode, I suppose. That the guys did this album as a soundtrack album of sorts, but it was constructed to function as a whole album. And I believe I have some comments from Roger specifically about that here. We'll get there in a moment. I have a quote from John. Quote, "We had the scripts and we went to see quite a lot of the footage. And then we all went away and all tried to write songs for various bits," unquote. Brian again, quote, "There's a subplot, which is a tragic love story. It came across to me very strongly. And I related it to my own life, and I thought, love always does come to an end at some time. Immediately, I had this song in my head called Who Wants to Live Forever." I want to talk about this. Brian and his love songs, White Queen, as it began. Long Away to me, yes, it's about reflecting about spirituality and what happens to us later. That's always felt like there's always love interwoven in Brian's songs. It's like father to son. That's about familial love. That's about family love, relationships, people. Brian always goes there. I love it when he does this. And I will gush all over that when we get to that song. All over that. That song is important in Queen's entire catalog and for me as well. We'll talk all about that. But Brian and his reflective introspection, I love it. Let's get back to our band comments. John again, quote, "I ended up writing another slow ballad, which is called 1 Year of Love, when he eventually decides to have another relationship with a woman again," unquote. Roger speaks about the album being more than just a soundtrack collection. Here it is. Quote, "I think the idea of a complete soundtrack album puts people off. I think they're imagining orchestral links, which don't really do anything. It's a fully fledged Queen album," unquote. John elaborates, quote, "We did all the music for the film first. When it came to doing the album, we rearranged a lot of the tracks and made them longer and wrote more lyrics, tried to make them into fully fledged songs so they stand up in their own right without necessarily having to be with the film. You can hear them on the radio and they would sound like songs rather than incidental music," unquote. Freddie's turn. Yay. Here we go. Freddie. Quote, "We all have our own ideas of how a song should be. A song can be done in so many different ways. Sometimes I just feel that it's not right. In the case of Roger's track, Magic, he did it in a totally different way, which was quite good, but I just felt there was another commercial streak. He was going away to LA for a week, so I got a hold of it and I changed it round completely. When he came back, I said, what do you think? And he said, oh, I like it. It was a completely different song, but sometimes you can see something else in other people's songs, unquote. He continued, quote, it's like a group policy. The group couldn't agree on one single. For the first time in Queen's life, we've actually made a film soundtrack, but we've also made a Queen album. We were fighting as to who liked which song, and we couldn't agree. In the end, we decided there should be two singles released simultaneously in different territories, unquote. And we'll talk about that, those songs and those singles, and how and why and where. Freddie and Brian went on to talk about the band's collaborations, how John has grown as a writer and is doing more, how they go to each other for ideas, how they drive this vehicle, Queen. And there's a very sad moment at the end of the interview when Freddie talks about always being involved in music, even if he doesn't prance around on stage anymore, that he'd produce or write, but he'd always be doing it. I imagine if Freddie was still with us, he would have done so much production. Can you imagine what he would have done if he was still here? I can't even. He was already going into opera. And as a whole, as a unit, even albums further down the road, the guys were starting to get into very experimental stuff that we hadn't heard before. And I'll go into all kinds of way too much detail about that when we finally come to our ultimate close, because I often wonder what the boys would have done if they'd continued on with the four of them as an intact unit. I imagine as they got even older and older with their families and grandkids, etc., that they probably would have taken longer and longer breaks. But I also imagine the amazing projects and collaborations that would have come to pass if we'd had all four of them together. Yes, the end of that interview for A Kind of Magic does make me imagine all sorts of what would have been stunning accomplishments from this band. But that is all of my band comments. So let's move on to the critics and fan sentiment. Some interesting commentary from various publications here. And what's fascinating is when this album was released in 86, and all the way up to this moment in time, right now, I feel as though general sentiment has remained very steady. Let's talk about that. But first, the accolades. This was voted the 42nd greatest album of all time in a 2006 national BBC poll. In 2007, Classic Rock ranked this the 28th greatest soundtrack album of all time. But at its release, reactions were mixed and indifferent. And I think that's because the assumption after Live Aid was that this would be Queen's ultimate crowning jewel. And for some, it missed the mark. Quote, a potpourri of musical styles. And it's quite probably only a band of Queen's stature and breadth of appeal who could put out an album of such diverse songs without disappointing a sizable portion of their fans, unquote. And that was Kerrang, or as it's actually titled, isn't it, with an exclamation? Kerrang! Am I saying that right? I don't know. But that is the first comment we get where, wow, there's a lot of different kinds of songs here. A lot of different styles, not sure how we feel about it. Here's another one. Quote, Queen have been plying their trade profitably for so long that there's really no point in becoming incensed at their one lack of vision. The only strong emotion Queen now evoke in me is a fervent wish that Brian May would cut his hair, unquote. That was Record Mirror. People Weekly also did not love it. Quote, there's hardly a personal expression, let alone an intimate one, in this album. Interesting. When Queen applies its mastery of electronics to songs that someone from this dimension can relate to, try I Want to Be Free from its album The Works, the group can be dazzling. In this case, they're just overbearing, unquote. Now, they did praise Freddie's dynamic vocals. But this whole thing about hardly a personal expression or an intimate one, hello, One Year of Love. I don't know, maybe they found it too contrived or too forced. I don't know. Rolling Stone, well, quote, the album, which might have been Queen's crowning moment, is absolutely bankrupt of gauche imagination, dominated by barren slabs of synthscape and guitarist Brian May's orchestral fretwork, a kind of magic sounds like hard rock with a hollow core. It's heavy plastic. His band might as well put some pomp back in its rock. Its members are never going to make it as dignified elder statesmen, unquote. Now, here's what's really strange to me. Rolling Stone, for the longest time, has done nothing but slap this band around or backhand compliment them occasionally. So for them to write something like that, and yes, these are different writers. It's not always the same person writing at Rolling Stone for every single Queen album. But for this review to come out that basically says, wow, they've got to go back. They've got to go back to what they were doing when Rolling Stone was always on them negatively about what they were doing. I don't understand it. And this is probably why, especially Roger, was always up in arms about Rolling Stone in general and that they were never a very legit music publication. Perceptions around Rolling Stone have been very, let's just say, varied over the years. Now, back to my sentiment critics here. Some critics noticed and frowned upon the heavier use of synthesizers. Current media sentiment, though, still puts this squarely in the middle of album rankings, perhaps slightly more positive, depending on the writer. Most publications agreeing this has some gems that stand the test of time, but otherwise generally falls somewhat flat, especially by Queen standards. Updated in 2022, Louder Sound ranked this album 11 on Queen albums ranked from worst to best. And they actually ranked this one slot higher than The Game, which is fascinating to me. And in that ranking, they had a little bit to say, quote, "The style here swept across the rock spectrum, accentuating the band's strengths along the way. And wherever they trod, Queen still managed to be grandiose in the manner only they could achieve," unquote. Fair, accurate assessment. Fans have a love and affection for this album, and even sites like AllMusic show this ranked quite high by fans and listeners. From the official AllMusic review, quote, "It may not have been as cohesive as some of their other albums, but A Kind of Magic was their best work in some time," unquote. UK and European fans' love for A Kind of Magic at its release was markedly stronger than American fans. And that's exactly why it charted so incredibly well in Europe, the UK specifically, number one. And in America, I just think a lot of people were not willing to receive this. And I think I have other quotes that I've already noted for some of the songs on this album and those dives that we'll go through that allude to that. The choices of songs, singles, the reception of them in general was markedly different in the States this time around. Interesting comments about the synthesizers and that some critics were not fond of what we were getting when it comes to all of the synthesizers. And that is largely because of the no synthesizers. Remember when Queen was always no synths, no synths, nobody played synthesizer. And now here we are. And I might add that one of the songs on this album is, and I'm going to be very diligent about checking this as we go forward, but is supposedly the last Queen song ever without any synthesizers. Whoa. Whoa, that's a big deal. And a lot of people were not jazzed about that, but the world changes, it evolves, the world of music shifts. And the boys knew that, and they had to evolve. They could have held on to what they were doing. There are some elements of the production I would have loved if they'd held on to those. But they changed. They experimented. They got bored, remember, before anyone else, so they'd always change it up. Too many synthesizers. I don't know. I can imagine. Yep. if the four of them had been able to stay together, if Freddie was still with us, if they could have kept going, the things they would have done with synthesizers and manipulations of sound, all of the editing and the experimentation, how fun would that have been? All right, let's get back to It's Kind of Magic. We're going to be singing that a lot as I go through these songs. I've got so many fun facts about this. It is overflowing. And I have a lot of comments about the tour. And the reason I did that, the reason I focus so much on the tour is because it is the last tour from Queen with Freddie. Sad. You guys, there is this fantastic website I use to reference a lot of tour notes, and I can't remember the URL right now. I have it bookmarked, along with all of my other bookmarked, tagged Queen resources. And it recounts every single tour and all the shows in pretty fantastic detail. There's a lot of photos people have contributed. And this person who runs this site has done this remarkable job gathering all this information. There are quotes from interviews, comments about the shows, details that you would otherwise know nothing about. And yet we have all of it from this website. And I was going through, I pulled up the website and I started looking at all the shows and I was reading about them and the very, 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 very last one. And then I realized there was no next tour button. There was no forward button. There was no next year button. There was nothing. And my heart just sank. It sunk. I was so upset. And I knew this was coming. I knew this was the last tour. So many reasons why that is. This is so bittersweet. We're not going to have, the next time we kick off an album, I am never going to have live versions to talk about ever again. Ever again. How will I get over this, guys? I'm going to have to eat some chocolate or Nutella or something after we're done with this album, I think. I don't even know how I'm going to cope with getting done with Queen entirely, but that is a whole nother ball of wax. Let's get back to A Kind of Magic, shall we? All of my fun facts. We're still talking about this great album. Let's do it. As Freddie Mercury would say. Queen's first digitally produced album. Did you know that? A Kind of Magic. 1986. I think this creates a very different atmosphere for Queen. I gotta admit, despite their skill, their awesomeness, their ability to capture sound and make it theirs and give it that Queen sound, I still love Analog Queen the best. So with A Kind of Magic, not only do we have more synthesizers, digital production, which at the time was such a massive deal. I think a lot of people thought, oh, this is going to save us so much time. And at the beginning of that digital era, it wasn't so much a time saver as it was just a shift in the way you were doing things. Now, if you compare how we make music to way back then, huge difference. But back then, there were still some kinks being worked out. I think I remember reading, and I didn't put this down in my notes, but I swear I remember reading somewhere that there were issues with the software. Or was that somebody else's album? You guys, you know what? There probably were issues. All of this new technology, yes, there would have been hiccups. So yes, A Kind of Magic, Queen's first digitally produced album. We're in a totally new era, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. And director Russell Mulcahy, I am so sorry. I do not know how to say that. I should have looked it up. But he was a director of film Highlander, of course, approached Queen to write and record music for his first major picture, Highlander. And the boys originally agreed to provide at least two tracks, as long as one was the title track. And by January of 86, the band agreed to provide the whole soundtrack. Six of this album's nine songs appear in the film. A Kind of Magic was produced by Queen, Mac, and David Richards, and includes a plethora of guest musicians, Spike, Philip, Edney, keyboards. And you remember Spike. We talked about how he played with the boys on stage. Guitar. We also have Steve Gregory, saxophone. National Philharmonic Orchestra. Wow. That's amazing. I gotta say, and I will gush more about this when I get to that track. Oh, how I wish the boys had more Philharmonic Orchestra guests on more songs more often. What an incredible sound. Oh my. We'll talk all about that when we get to that song. And of course, Joan Armatrading, incidental vocals on a song. The boys worked on songs after viewing snippets of film edits. Highlander premiered in March, several months before A Kind of Magic would be finished and released in June. And even hard at work on this album, band members kept busy with breaks and other projects. Freddie collaborated on a song, Hold On, for German movie Zabo, and sang co-wrote with Billy Squire. Roger worked with rock band Magnum, co-producing album Vigilante with David Richards and providing backing vocals. John co-wrote This Is Your Time with Errol Brown. And during studio work for this album, the band allowed a film crew to document their genius in Munich. You guys. All right. I don't want to say what song that is. You probably know what it is if you've seen the footage. We're going to talk about that footage a lot. It is adorable. But back to my fun facts. The boys covered New York during their sessions, and a snippet was included in the Highlander film. But an official release has never seen the light of day, and Queen Productions has emphatically denied the existence of a full recording. That was another reason I had to go watch the movie, because that snippet of New York, New York only appears briefly. It's vague. It's almost difficult to hear because of what's happening in that scene. It's quite intense. But because there was no official soundtrack released for Highlander ever, even though we have that fantastic score from Michael Kamen, New York, New York, covered by Queen, does not officially exist, at least according to Queen Productions. The song, Give Me the Prize, is supposedly Queen's very last song released without any synthesizers. Give Me the Prize. We'll talk more about that later. On June 1st, before this album's release in the UK, it received silver, gold, and platinum certs due to over 300,000 pre-orders before its release. That is the kind of anticipation Live Aid created. Do you understand it now? The UK could not wait to get their hands on A Kind of Magic. The CD release of this album included three bonus tracks, including Forever, the piano version of Who Wants to Live Forever, and extended versions of A Kind of Magic and Friends Will Be Friends. The album's artwork was drawn by visual effects animator Roger Chiasson, who also, of course, worked on Highlander. You might recognize some of the scribbles and the art in the film. A set of four of his original pencil drawings of each of the Queen members in their animated form sold for over £1,000. And honestly, I'm surprised it wasn't a lot more. I've seen those illustrations. I actually found them. You guys, that was one of those amazing finds. I never would have discovered it if I wasn't deep diving and digging online for everything I could get. And I think when I found it, I was looking up, it had to do with the artwork of the cover. I was looking up the artist, and I happened to find his website, or a website that had collections of his, and that's where I found them. The pencil drawings of Freddie, Brian, Roger, and John. That entire collection. And they sold for £1,000. That's it. I would have paid that. I would have paid a lot more than that. Now, once the album was complete and released, it was less than a week before the band kicked off their tour, their final tour, the Magic Tour. 26 European shows, not nearly as many as some of their late 70s tours, but an amazing tour nonetheless, setting records with huge sellout crowd attendance and the usual ridiculous parties and celebrations that followed. One of these shows was in Hungary. Of course, the filmed Budapest concert, Hungarian Rhapsody, played behind the Iron Curtain, which separated the USSR from the rest of Europe during the Cold War until 1991. The sold-out Wembley Nights, those shows resulted in the much-loved and celebrated Wembley recordings. This show featured giant inflatable balloons representing the cartoon version of the group on that kind of magic cover. Three were caught by the crowd, but one got away, landed in Chelmsford, approximately 35 miles away. I think that was the Freddy blow up. Very cool fact about that iconic photo of Freddy bending backward as far as possible on stage with the crowd as his backdrop. Longtime Queen photographer Neil Preston took that photo, his fourth frame of the night, at the first Wembley performance. I got that little tidbit from my Neil Preston photograph book. Before the Mannheim June 21st performance, Freddie had an idea to arrive onto the stage via the bucket of a huge crane. And that would have been cool, right? Would have been so cool. But it took all of a few seconds raised above the stage in said crane bucket during soundcheck for Freddie to change his mind completely in terror. No, I'm not doing this. You're not bringing me in on a bucket. Then there's the famous Nebworth performance, the last with the band's lineup, including Freddie. This show was actually added due to such high demand. Very bittersweet moment, but they flew in on a helicopter. John threw his Fender Precision bass at the end of Radio Gaga, and it crashed into his other basses. None of them too dinged up, thank goodness. Freddie sounded great at this show, and it's one of Roger's favorite shows from their tours ever. Freddie's final words to the crowd were, quote, "Thank you, beautiful people. You've been a really special audience. Thank you very much. Good night, sweet dreams. We love you," unquote. At least 120,000 people attended the show. Some claims put this closer to 200,000, a proper closeout for an amazing band. And at the time, it was the largest single paying audience for a UK rock concert in over a decade. Thousands of fans camped outside the park gates the night before. To know that he said, "We love you," as his last words to the crowd, that is a very touching, sentimental thing. And I know some of you, if you know, you know. And we're not going to talk about that for a long time, but we'll come back. We'll circle back to that. And I really hope I remember that those were the last words he spoke to the crowd. It's a poignant thing. The band released A Kind of Magic and Who Wants to Live Forever as video singles, which was a brand new concept no one else had done. They entered the video chart, which was always filled with live concerts and compilations. They entered the chart at number one. By November, just a few months later, Queen had no less than 5 videos in the top 10 of the British video chart. 5 videos in the top 10. Also by late November, EMI had released every Queen album on CD, albeit with glaring errors. Stems from One Vision have been made available online after they were cracked from the video game Rock Band, where it was released as downloadable content on Tuesday, the 20th of October in 2009. So many fun facts, so many cool things about that. The shows, the epicness, the awesomeness of this band on a stage. I still can't believe this is the last time we're going to get to talk about that. How many times have I said it? Gosh, I wish there was a live version of this song. I'm going to be saying that every single time we talk about something in the albums that follow. Album 12, A Kind of Magic. Decidedly rock pop, A Kind of Magic, and shaped primarily by songs reworked from the Highlander unofficial soundtrack to be more radio ready. This album is overwhelmingly accessible and softer. It's the playful, peppy side of Queen turned up to the max and bouncing from one energized song to the next. Keyboards aplenty make appearances, but blend with the rock and roll grit, perhaps even more successfully than the previous album. And manipulations cleverly done in digital fashion take voices and instruments for a ride. Conventional melodies are peppered with surprising and exciting movements. Freddie sounds particularly confident, effortless as always, encouraging fun. He takes lead vocals on every song, sharing only once, technically, with Brian, carrying each composition with the same Mercury enthusiasm we'd expect. Tenderness in One Year of Love. His power in One Vision, the aggression of Princes of the Universe, and the sensitivity of Friends Will Be Friends. As always, our favorite frontman delivers every emotion effectively. Brian doesn't just jive on his soaring lyrical guitar. He gives us perhaps one of his most celebrated compositions ever, providing the lead in vocal with delicate, somber realization in Who Wants to Live Forever. And what a thrill it is to hear him take lead after all this time. It's been a while since we've heard Brian in any kind of a lead vocal. His guitar playing just keeps getting better and better. The arrangements, the riffs, more complex. The effects, startling. That playful, a kind of magic. The dirty grit and the ridiculous rising intro and Give Me the Prize. He may not be giving us full woodwinds of yesteryear, but when he simply plays, because he's getting so good, he's always been good, but he's just excelling. He simply shines. Roger has plenty of shiny moments too. More than competent in his background vocal delivery and his dynamics. Dynamic as ever on his kit. Surprising fills, crashes, bangs in the opening One Vision. What an atmosphere. Restrained panache in One Year of Love. Bustling, busy, booming arrangements in his own Don't Lose Your Head. The versatility of Roger Taylor and his glistening high harmonies that still stand out even after all this time. A talent to behold. And John, never one to be confined to the tonic or an arrangement that marks time predictably. No, he's all over the spectrum. Convincingly. Heavy rocking in Give Me the Prize contrasted with the bopping, rolling lightness in Pain is So Close to Pleasure. He's delicate and light with his touch on his own One Year of Love. And together, these four men, along with those handful of guest musicians, create a dramatic, delightful, magical album that bursts with memorable moments, an awakened energy, and an edgy brightness that rivals some of their best moments. This may not have been the most cohesive collection. This may not have had the strongest rock moments, but I think what it does is amplify the enthusiasm we heard on The Works, taking it to another level. They are so playful here. And I feel that. I feel that lightness, that brightness, that anticipation, the camaraderie when I see the footage of them working in the studio. I'm sure it wasn't always like that. I'm sure in a way they were putting on a bit of a face because the cameras were there. You can't be yourself all the time. Sometimes you just go into the mode. But one thing Queen always are and always were is genuine. And what I get from that footage, what I get from the interviews, what I get from these songs is enthusiasm. Something real, something tangible. Something that is bigger than it's ever been because it's been so long. And even though the guys have been through it, both the positive and the negative, they've been through it. They've felt things. They've hurt each other. They've said things. They've all walked out at one point and said, I'm done. And then they always went back. Because Queen is the train that never stops. Who said that? Was that Roger? I read that in an interview a long time ago when I first fell in love with the band. Queen never stops. It's like that comment that Roger made. I think, again, that was Roger. Something about there were people who felt like the band died when Freddie did. And he said that they felt the same way. But the band just wouldn't quit. And it's because of the fans. It's because of the love of the fans. When Queen went out there and did Live Aid and they blew everything up, everybody there, the fans, the people who weren't the fans in the audience, but maybe became fans because of Live Aid, the people who were watching on TV, the people performing on the stage, the musicians, the artists, the other bands, everybody thought, wow, wow. Queen just stole the whole thing. It was invigorating. It was revitalizing. The guys needed it. If they hadn't had that, we would have had a break. Don't know what would have happened. Instead, Live Aid happened. And then, ooh, what are we going to do? They focused that energy. Hey, guys, come do the soundtrack. And the guys at first, I don't know, we were going to take a break. Hey, wow, this footage is pretty cool. Christopher Lambert in a kilt. Massive swords, magical swords, as it would appear. Pretty ladies. Yeah. Rough and tumble, guys fighting. Time travel. Well, not time travel. Sorry. I don't want to give it all away. But anyway, the guys watch this stuff. Ooh, this is fun. This is cool. This is, what did Brian say? This is us. Let's do this. This is fun. Yeah. And they all took a moment to write something that it spoke to them, this film. Somehow it spoke to them and they wrote something. And they created an album and they made more. They made more songs and they put it all together into this more conventional, yes, more radio ready, more approachable, accessible sound. Very poppy, pop infused. It's that synthesizer thing. But there's still some rock here. Oh, there's still some pretty heavy rock here. Hello, Brian, growling with that guitar. Many impressive performances here as well. But you know what? Unlike the last album, where I struggled immensely picking one man who blew me away more than the rest, I think I might already know. Yeah, I haven't even started. I think I might already know. Pretty close. But what do I think about A Kind of Magic? You guys, I've gone over the facts and band comments and critique and all that jazz. What do I think about A Kind of Magic? I'm going to be honest with you. For a while, and you guys, let me preface this by saying, I don't hate anything Queen does. No, that's impossible. I don't dislike anything they do. I enjoy everything. That being said, A Kind of Magic, one of my lowest ranking Queen albums. Why? All right. I love 70s Queen. That's the most obvious thing. I love moody prog rock, chip on the shoulder, angst Queen. I love it. I love playful Queen. I love, you know, jazz. Plenty of playfulness there. Let me entertain you. Dead on Time. One of my favorites ever. I love a good Don't Stop Me Now. But I definitely enjoy 70s Queen. Far and away, more than anything we're going to hear in the 80s. And something about A Kind of Magic feels a little less genuine. Just a little bit. I don't know if it's because the guys were in that mode of writing for a film. And even though what they're expressing is coming from a personal place, Brian himself said he felt that backstory, that love story, that tragedy. He felt that within himself. So he wrote Who Wants to Live Forever. And I imagine everybody else had moments where something struck them and they had to write about it because it spoke to them somehow. Well, I'm going to take that. I'm going to write that. I'm going to write that scene right there. I'm going to do it because that's me. That's mine. I don't know if it was because of that motivation or what, but something about A Kind of Magic in general feels maybe not less genuine, less passionate. And I suppose having said that, I can understand that comment. What was that publication that said that? That there didn't seem to be any emotion coming from the band here. I don't feel this album as much. That's what it is. It doesn't feel as much in general as some of their other work, as some of their previous work does. Was it the production? Were there frustrations because of production? Was it the different approach of songwriting? Was it a little of all of it? Was there a disconnect because they were working on many different things? They were working on so much while they were working on this album. Collaborations, other projects. Maybe that's it. A lack of focus. The band is the biggest thing, but it's not the only thing. When Queen were out there in the mid, late 70s and they were writing and touring and writing and touring and recording and touring, blah, 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 blah. Wash and repeat. Rinse, lather, repeat. Over and over and over again. The same thing. They were in the thick of it. They were always doing Queen. Yeah, they were doing collaborations, but I think what I've gathered as I've read a lot of references and books and notes and watched a lot of interviews, the guys were more and more and more, as we get through the 80s, collaborating, or they were doing solo projects. And perhaps that, because they had all these other outlets, it's not all funneling into Queen. It's not all going into this one thing that's bigger than everything else anymore. There are a lot of facets to each of these men. So consequently, Queen as a whole is not the same all-powerful thing it used to be, at least in my mind. So for me, A Kind of Magic was always not the same top tier as some of the other albums. And I would still tell you that now. A Kind of Magic, it is one of the albums that when I think about the track list, I forget what song comes next. And it's not like that with their earlier albums. You know, I can generally tell you, oh, this is the order of the songs. In my head, I can hear when one song concludes, I can hear the next one start. But with A Kind of Magic, I forget. Although I do admit, there was a period where I was running and I was listening to this album a lot. And I couldn't tell you why. Even though I love rocking out Queen, I kept coming back to A Kind of Magic, listening to it on my runs. Is it because it's kind of, like I said, it's more playful, it's more lighthearted? To me, it feels less serious. Not that Queen's ever taken themselves that seriously. They take the work seriously, but not themselves. They're focused on the work, but they don't ever get too crazy about what they're doing. They like to have fun. They like to be cheeky. Don't take them at face value all the time. A Kind of Magic. I'm really curious to see if my opinion changes, as it sometimes does, from start to finish through these albums. And I'll tell you what, even though this album doesn't impress me as much as some of the others, there are moments here that blow me away. Yes, goosebumps, frisson. Look it up. How do you spell that? F-R-I-S-S-O-N, I think. Frisson. It is that effect of music just setting you, just lighting you up. It's electric. Boogie, woogie, woogie. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I still don't know how to do the electric slide. Fun fact about me. When I went on a class trip years and years ago, everybody was doing the electric slide and I loved the song, but I didn't know how to do the dance. I am so not coordinated. I suppose when I try to be, I am. I've got great rhythm. I've got rhythm. I've got music. Oh, but I can't dance. Anyway. Yeah. Electric slide. Frisson. It's electric. It goes through you. It hits you. Goosebumps, you know, hair standing up on the back of your neck. That's what I'm talking about. And there are several moments from A Kind of Magic that do that to me. Ooh, one of them is so evocative and powerful and astounding and passionate that I usually have to repeat it at least once. And we'll talk all about that moment. Ooh, ooh, it's great. It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic. Yeah. I just made it a jazzy thing, but we'll dive into that one later. You guys, I'm so excited. I always get so jazzed when we're kicking off another album, and I've only got a few more of these to enjoy. Maybe that's why I'm dragging my feet so much. Apologies for my delayed recordings as of late. I got to start kicking myself, punishing myself something for not keeping up on these, but I'll try to do better. In the meantime, keep yourselves alive. And I'll be back next time to kick off the first track on Queen's 12th album, A Kind of Magic. Stay cool. Stay awesome. Stay yourselves. Be genuine. Yeah, that's not right of me to say this isn't a genuine Queen album. There's just something about the intensity of it that's not quite the same for me. We shall see how it all plays out. The enjoyable moments and how numerous they become. And as I pick apart things in great detail, maybe something will amaze and astound me, something I hadn't noticed. Maybe a simple fact about the creation of a song will spur some intrigue, and I will love it all the more. But I'll be back next time, you guys. Shake it up. Sparkle. Look up. Go outside. Look at the stars. Grab a pair of cheap binoculars and go look at the Orion Nebula. You will be amazed, I promise you. You know how big that thing is? And it's so small up there. Stay in awe. Stay humble. I'll be back next time.